thing, it's because I don't get it. I don't get it. You know, when I was really young, a teenager, it was hard for me to be compassionate. I remember at Fried Hardeman having a good friend named Redus Tatum. Redus was a good guy, and Redus was in the ninth grade, a good athlete in Summertown, Tennessee, and then he was stricken with polio, and he became crippled from the waist down. Pretty much a man from the waist up, strong, walked on crutches, had to have braces to walk, had his car fixed where he could drive his car, hand-operated accelerator, hand-operated brakes. He was able to maneuver that car and do very well. It's hard for me to identify with Redus. We were good friends and stayed good friends and have been still good friends. And I haven't gotten to see him much in the last several years, but it was really hard for me to identify with Redus because, you see, I had great use of my legs. I didn't have any troubles. I remember chapel in Old Chapel Hall, and some of you older folks will remember that an elevator was installed, and Redus could not get up to chapel unless someone carried him, unless the elevator was working. He would be so frustrated over that elevator not working, and I'm thinking, what's the big deal? He wanted to go up, and he couldn't. It's a big deal, isn't it? I heard a sweet lady say this week about having an event scheduled for people in an area where handicapped people could not get there. You see, that troubled me a great deal, and I wondered why. Why would we do that? When I was a teenager, I wouldn't have even thought about it. So life transitions and compassion becomes more important to us. I want us to think tonight a little bit about compassion. And I have entitled this, The Compassion of a Father. The Bible talks a little bit about the compassion of God the Father, but we learn mostly about the compassion of God the Father as we look at the compassion of the Son. So, if we want to see how compassionate God the Father is, there are some good passages, but mostly we look at the life of Christ. And there are two things I want to share with you tonight. I want to share with you a couple of examples from the life of Jesus and how he put compassion in action. But I want you to think about the compassion of Jesus as he taught. So if we follow in the footsteps of Jesus, we're going to both live the compassion of God as well as teach the compassion of God. Jesus said in John 14, verse 9, if you want to see the Father, look at me. Actually, the passage says, whoever has seen me has seen the Father. So if we want to see what God is like in any of his attributes, we can take a look at Jesus and we're going to be able to see. So we look at the compassion of Jesus as we look at a little bit of the ministry of Jesus while he was here and the teaching of Jesus about compassion, and we'll see the compassion of a Father. I've asked Ben to help me. I want him to come and lead Does Jesus Care? We're going to see the compassion of Jesus as we sing and raise this question. Does Jesus really care about me? You know, we can talk about sin out there and the compassion that God has for sin, all of that sort of thing, but does Jesus have compassion on me? When my world is tumbling in, when I'm sick, when things are happening to me, does Jesus really care? When I lose someone in death that's really close to me, does Jesus care? Sing this song and think about the compassion of Jesus toward you.
Does Jesus care? We see Amy.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's there. I know it's there. Now, today, as we think about our lives, everybody in the room has something going on for which you need God's help. Every one of you. Some of you have less serious things than others. Give thanks to God, because in this world, those days do not generally last. You may be an exception. But for most of us, life is going to be full of bumps and hills and valleys and problems. Great blessings? Yes. But does Jesus really care about you and your plight, your loneliness, your hurt, your misery, your sickness? Does he care? We just said, oh, yes, he cares. I know he cares. His heart is filled with my grief. What a great blessing it is to know that. Now, as we think about Jesus and his compassion, which shows us the compassion of a father, we know we have a sympathetic high priest. Well, what does that mean? Well, we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but one who in every respect has been tempted as we are, yet without sin. There's no temptation that you face, but that all the rest of us face that same kind of temptation. Jesus faced that same kind of temptation, and yet he was without sin. He can sympathize, and that word means that he will feel with us when you and I struggle with sin, and every one of us does. We struggle with sin. Jesus feels with us. That is so powerful. It is so important. The Apostle Paul couldn't be a greater person in service to God, could they? So far as we know, he was as great a servant of God, as holy a man of God as you and I have ever read about when he was converted to Christianity. But when you read Romans 7, he struggled. The things that he knew he should not do, he said, that's what I do. The things that I know that I should do, I don't get them done. And then look at verse 18. I know that nothing good dwells within me, that is, in my flesh. For I have the desire to do what is right, but not the ability to carry it out. All of us are going to stumble. We're all going to fall, and every time we do, are you listening to me? Every time we do. You know, sometimes I stumble, and I don't mean to. I don't mean to. I am looking off out here, and I trip over something, and I just about fall. I didn't mean to do that. I didn't see that coming. When we stumble in that way, God feels with us. But sometimes I know I'm about to say something or do something I know better than to say or do. I do it anyway. God still feels with us. That doesn't mean that we don't sin. It doesn't mean that it doesn't matter that we sin. It doesn't mean that God is saying it's okay that you sin. But I'm telling you, God feels with you. He understands that feeling that you have, the strong temptation that you have. He's there with you, feeling for you. And so we have a sympathetic high priest. That's how God feels about every one of us. Now, as we look at that sympathy, that compassion, that feeling with us and for us in action, there are some great examples. I mean, there are many examples. If you read the gospel messages, you're going to see so many good things that are going on. It's amazing how God responds to us. Now, if you take a look in Mark chapter 5, you're going to read the story of a bunch of pigs. Well, it's actually not the story of a bunch of pigs, is it? It's a story about a man who is afflicted severely with demons. When Jesus asked their name, they said, "Legion, for we're many." This guy had been wandering, living in cemeteries, living out. He was so powerful, they would chain him, bind him, and he could break the chains. And he just was something to be afraid of. But those spirits recognized Jesus. They begged him, not to send them out of the country. And so there was a herd of swine, pigs, about 2,000 of them. Jesus permitted those demons to go into the pigs. The pigs go running down the hill and into the sea and are destroyed. The man is free. He'd been so horrible to be around. Not dressed well. Not being the kind of person any of us would want to be around. And now he is dressed and polite and acting in the way that you would want someone that you were going to be around to act. He wanted so much now to go with Jesus, wouldn't you? Jesus had freed him from a horrible, horrible life. And now he wants to go with Jesus. And look at verse 19. Here's what Jesus said. "You go home to your friends and you tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." Jesus felt for this man. How would you like to just have to live in the cemetery for a little while? Make your home down at the city cemetery, or out on the cemetery, out on the highway, or anywhere else in a cemetery. How would you like that? How would you like for people to want to bind you with chains? How would you want to be so forcefully controlled by demons you cannot do what you want to? Wouldn't it be a fantastic thing when someone comes and frees you from that kind of lifestyle? Jesus said, "Go home. Go home. Make sure you tell them at home how much the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy upon you." This is the idea of helping someone out of pity for them. Jesus' soul had pity on this guy. He so wanted this guy to be the norm, to be able to deal with life the way everyone gets to deal with life, to make choices. Here's a guy that was being controlled by evil spirits. Now he's free. He can make his own choice. His own choice would be to follow Jesus. Jesus said, "No, you go home." And here's what you do. But Jesus helped this guy out of pity. And there are several examples of that in the New Testament. What a tender heart Jesus had. Jesus looked at the city of Jerusalem. He said, "Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how often would I have gathered you together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you would not." Boy, I can see the tender heart of Jesus working, thinking about this great city that God had set aside for his chosen people as the place where he could come to be with them. But they would not. There's so many stories where in his personal interaction, Jesus reflects that tender heart. There's a story in Mark chapter 3 about Jesus going to the synagogue. And he sees there a man with a withered hand. He knows what these people are thinking. They were there to check him out. They were there to see if he's going to do something that to them was unlawful on the Sabbath day. They weren't at the synagogue to study or to worship or to discuss God and godly kinds of things. They were there to check Jesus out. They were there for the entire wrong reason. And so Jesus knew what they were thinking. And so he heals the withered hand. What a great blessing. You see, it's hard for those of us who have two hands that work real well to understand how horrible it is to not be able to use your hands. Some of you have had accidents, I'm sure, where you couldn't use your hand. You may have had a cast as you were growing up on a hand, and you had to write in a strange way, or you couldn't do what you wanted to do. And we learn how terrible it is. But as quickly as we get the use back of our hands, our compassion for people who are forever unable to use their extremities, it seems to lower, and we stop thinking about them. But Jesus had pity on this guy with the withered hand. But you know, that's not what I want you to think about with regard to this particular story, even though it's a great point to think about. I want you to look at verse 5. Jesus looked around at these Jewish leaders with anger. And it wasn't a fit of anger that just happened in a moment. This was a deliberate anger. Jesus was thinking about their plight. And the text says he was grieved at the hardness of their heart. You see, here are people who were there for the wrong reason. They were thinking the wrong things, and they were about to do the wrong thing to Jesus in the future. They would have that day if they could have. But they were going to do the wrong thing with Jesus, and Jesus knew their heart. He knew they were wrong, and he was grieved. He had compassion on these people. The grief here is sorrow or pain, and it refers to either sorrow or pain of the body or sorrow or pain of the mind. Jesus is hurt. His physical person is probably good, but his heart is broken because of the sinful nature of the hearts of these men. Their heart was so hard, they refused to see the goodness of God, even though they were thinking, boy, we are godly people. We're going to catch this guy, and we're going to nail him for doing unlawful things on the Sabbath. He was grieved. He was extending sympathy toward people who were unbelievably hard-hearted. And it's the same kind of sympathy that we use when we're talking about losing someone in death. These people were their own worst enemy. You see, as we say, they were shooting themselves in the foot. They were shooting themselves in the heart. They were shooting themselves in the soul. Any way you want to say it, they were their own worst enemy. And God was grieved in their heart. So when we choose the hard part, when we're ugly, and we mean to be ugly, we may even sometimes think we're doing good. I believe these men thought they were doing good. But Jesus was grieved in his heart even about people who intentionally didn't care about him or his will. So, compassion in the personal interaction in Jesus' life. But secondly, compassion in his teaching. How can we not remember such a familiar story as Good Samaritan? Don't remember when I first heard about the Good Samaritan? Didn't know much about what good was back then. Didn't know much about what a Samaritan was. But I remember the story. I remember the teacher when I was a very young age, trying to help us see that some religious leaders were not what they ought to be. They weren't thinking the way they ought to be thinking. They saw a man who had been beaten and robbed. I'm sure they had a busy life, don't you? I'm sure they had many things to do. Don't you have many things to do? I'm sure they had so many things on their mind. Don't you have much on your mind even tonight? And so they left the guy laying on the road, beaten, robbed, perhaps dying. To help us understand what compassion is about, Jesus chooses to use the concept of a Samaritan. These two guys, the priest and the Levite, they would have not cared at all about this particular person because of his race. They wouldn't have cared about who he was. Or they probably would be offended that Jesus was even talking about a Samaritan in a story. But in his teaching, Jesus shows us who our neighbor is. That's what this story is about. Who should I help? Who am I to help? Jesus is really saying, who am I not to help? When this lawyer asked Jesus what you needed to do to have eternal life, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love your neighbor as you love yourself, Jesus said, you got it. You accomplish that and you will live. But the guy trying to justify himself, this story says, who's my neighbor? Who is my neighbor? And so Jesus began to show him in a very powerful story in the first century. But isn't it powerful to us too? It involves action. Compassion is just not a feeling. It is a feeling, but that doesn't get it done. I have felt many times sad and bad about things and did absolutely nothing. Have you ever been there? That's not the kind of compassion that Jesus demonstrated. It's not the kind of compassion that Jesus is teaching. It's quite likely the priest and the Levite felt bad. Oh man, that guy must be suffering. I hate that he was robbed. They could have had any number of feelings, but the story says they passed by on the other side of the road. They didn't behave. And when Jesus tells the story of the Samaritan coming by, taking him, binding his wounds, taking him to an inn, instructing the innkeeper to take care of him, whatever debt is incurred, I will come back and pay. Jesus then asked, lawyer, who is the neighbor? The one who showed mercy. And here's Jesus' statement in his teaching. You go and do likewise. Do you see people that need help that are not all that neat looking to you? They don't smell all that good. They are not from, if you'll let me use the phrase, the same side of the tracks that you're from. They always need help. They always keep coming. They're just not desirable people. They're lazy. They're good for nothing. And so I'm going to go by on the other side of the road. Do you know anybody who thinks like that and who behaves like that? You want to be a neighbor? You want to show the compassion in your life that Jesus taught us? You go and show mercy to people who need help. And then perhaps the strongest story of compassion that helps us, because it talks about our kids. It talks about us as moms and dads. It talks about our kids who do not behave in the way that they should. Here's a young man who deliberately left. He deliberately wasted his substance with riotous living. He wound up in a horrible, terrible place. He disgraced himself. God shows us that even when we disgrace ourselves with riotous living and we waste a good portion of our lives, He so wants us back. He so wants us to come to Him, love Him. He is wanting us to be with Him, even when we've disgraced ourselves. This young man came to Him. That's one of the greatest statements made about any man. Because you see, in order to come to the Lord who has compassion on us right now, we're going to have to come to ourselves. We're going to have to realize that outside of a right relationship with God, we are just like the prodigal son. We are wasting our lives and we can achieve nothing of any significant value. And the reality is, whether we wind up in a physical pig pen, hungry, starving to death, or not, we will ultimately wind up in a spiritual pig pen, starving spiritually, dead, outside of a relationship with God. This story is so great, showing us the compassion of a father for us, showing us the compassion for people who want to come to the Father. Oh, and it's hard. It's hard. If I commit a sin that you don't feel very good about, that you think is a lot worse than other sins, when I want to come back, it's so hard for you to let me back in. It's so hard for you to feel good about me. It's hard for you to see me as clean spiritually as you are. It's hard for you to see that I deserve to sit on the same bench you do. And you see, the reason is because none of us deserve to sit on that bench. It is by the grace of God for every one of us. And so this story teaches us that while this young man who had come to himself and he's ready to turn around and say, "I'm not worthy to be your son, just make me as one of your hired servants," when his father saw him a long way off, his father saw him, look at this, here's the feeling. I don't know if any of you had a son or a daughter in a spiritual pig pen or not, or a mom or a dad in a spiritual pig pen, or a husband or a wife in a spiritual pig pen. But if you have, you can understand a little bit the feeling of the father. He had compassion. How grateful he was that his son was coming home. But here's the action. He ran. Ran to him. He didn't let the boy get all the way home. He ran to him. He embraced him. He kissed him. And he said, "Let's kill the fatted calf and let us be merry." Why? Feeling of death. The feeling of being lost was all over that father and it was all over the son. My son was lost, but now he's found. My son was dead, but now he's alive. He felt compassion. He acted on that compassion. That's what we want to do from the teaching of Jesus. So tonight, if you're in this room and you're not in a right relationship with God, you can know the Lord had compassion on you because he practiced it and he taught it. And you can know that there's some godly people in this room who have witnessed the life of Christ as we've studied the gospel message and we have read the teachings of the Spirit of God through men that delivered this word to us about the compassion of Jesus. So you can know, if you need to respond tonight, everybody in this room accountable before God should be rejoicing, should be running to meet you psychologically, so grateful for your coming back. If you need to be born into the body of Christ by repenting of your sins and being baptized, you should believe the God of heaven has compassion on you and he will certainly run to meet you. So if you need, please come. Because of the compassion of the Father, the need you have, and the compassion that people here can bestow upon you. Come as we stand and as we sing, if you have the need.